You're listening to Face of a Feminist with Laura Diaz and Marissa Clark.
All right, here we are, Face of a Feminist. I'm Laura Diaz.
And I'm Marissa Clark.
And today we have a crowd.
Today's a hot mess already.
And it's funny because we're with a guy named Jim Colbert, who is normally the host of his own show.
Right.
So it's probably really weird for him to be the one getting interviewed for once, because he's usually the one down everyone else's throat.
Yeah.
Hello, Jim.
Hey, how are you? Hey, right. And thanks for the invite, man.
You're so welcome, even though we're at your house and your studio.
This is way more professional than we're used to. Normally, we're in my kitchen, and I have an 800-square-foot apartment, so it's not a good time. And
we just threw this little studio together.
Yeah, exactly. He's just got like a real professional home studio. I have like a little Zoom mini recorder that we just take wherever we go. It sounds like crap every episode.
Oh, come on.
I apologize to anyone listening who's like, oh, is this what it's supposed to
sound
like?
Wow, this is the real deal. Do you want to introduce yourself? You've got like a lot of titles.
Yeah, so started out on The Monsters, co-founder of The Monsters, as Dirty Jim. And I chose that name because I had two kids in the public school system. And when you talk to people the way I spoke to people back in the day in the beginning of my career, it was aggressive and a bit caustic, and respect really wasn't considered a lot. So I didn't really want my kids to have to live with my last name in public schools. So I chose the name Dirty Jim.
Really? And then,
that's the story.
I never knew the story behind Dirty Jim.
Everybody thought it was because of my coarse language, which I'm extremely ninja level, skill level at. But no, it has nothing to do with that. I owned a printing company at one point. My fingers were all dirty. And when the show hit, Russ came up and he said, hey, we got to come up with a name today because they're doing like the promo shots today at the station. And I said, just call me Dirty Jim and we'll go from there. And my everybody hated it because everybody thought, of course, it was kind of pervy. It came off
like
pervy.
You're dirty. And yeah.
Right. But it had actually nothing to do with that whatsoever. I just simply didn't want to say my last name on the air.
That's so
funny.
And
I protected that successfully with my family for a very long time. That had a lot of value. I didn't want my kids to become a byproduct of your stereotypical entertainment relationship or whatever, where the person's identity is their job. I didn't really want to do that. So I kind of built a personal wall with the name. And then now I have my kids kind of graduate from high school, let the cat out of the bag. My name is Jim Colbert, and I host a show called Primetime Kitchen, was dedicated to cooking. And then I also am taking over for the Phillips File with the Jim Colbert Show in January of 2019.
That's awesome. That's so amazing. We've been following you. Obviously, we've been friends for years. You're great on the morning show now, I can't wait for you to start your new show next year.
I can't either. It's going to be fun.
The Jim Colbert Show. But
we can't forget Special Mike over here.
Oh, that came off poorly.
Oh.
Special Mike comes
did
off
you,
bad.
Wait, Jim, did you know why we call him Special Mike?
I do have a special name.
Do you really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I've known Mike for quite a while, so I have a lot of specials that can slide into that blank and that open-ended question.
He is only referred to Special Mike on the air, obviously.
Okay.
This is not like some cutesy bedroom name I've given him. He's Special Mike because I'm on the morning show on XL.
Can I interrupt?
Yes.
So in your bedtime times, Special Mike would be considered.
No, you don't want to hear how they talk to each other at nighttime, because I have, and it's very uncomfortable.
Well, I've been around both of them back when Laura would have a couple, and I remember like one of the first times we ever went out as a crew, and that was an eye-opener.
She gets nasty.
Yeah, the baby talk needs to be left in the bedroom.
I actually looked at my wife and I said, do they like each other? I'm not 100% sure. Are they together? Are they brother and sister?
I remember you talking to me after that, and you said, man, I think I really like your relationship, because you guys are like the best of friends.
Yeah, I don't know what to take of it. I think the giant mystery of whether it is or isn't is what makes it work.
Right. We haven't done it since 2016, but it's all good.
Stop.
We're best friends. That's what matters. Of course, I'm kidding.
Wait, so how did Special Mike come about?
Special Mike came about because I was on my morning show on XL 106.7, and the people on my show said that he must be special to be married to someone like me.
Oh my God.
Yes. Well, that's just factual.
I mean, that's actually how he acquired his nickname, Special Mike. So now when he's a guest on our podcast, we continue the Special Mike name. And it's just one more insult towards me. No biggie. That's
what everyone loves. She handles it very well.
Everything's fine. Everything's fine.
Everything's super fine. So we wanted to interview Jim, Marissa and I, because you have this Primetime Kitchen show, which does amazing, and I'm so proud of you. Oh, my gosh. I would never actually watch it because I don't cook. I can't even cook spaghetti, whatever.
Right.
Like, get over it.
Which maybe you should watch it for that reason.
Don't care.
I can't cook either, and I watch it.
Yeah,
and I'll try to cook you stuff.
I know, and I watch it, and I'm just like, ugh, like, who's going to get sun-dried tomatoes? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that is crazy.
Yeah, like, who's going to make an extra stop in the store to pick those
this
up?
This is a mint that came fresh off of a dove, watered by dove tears.
Oh, yeah, and he'll be so pompous drinking, like, scotch or something, and I'll be like, just a splash of scotch.
You know, we went out for a beer one time, and I got a Miller Lite, and you would have thought I killed somebody.
Why?
Because it wasn't some IPA or something.
I sat one stool over. I actually got out of my stool, turned one side. I said, just can't be seen.
So you're bougie not just with food, then?
I am bougie with a lot of things. Oh, I've got a bougie humidor full of cigars. I've got bougie liquor in my liquor cabinet and the bougiest of all bouge time beers in that cooler right
there. I see that.
He is a bougie son of a bitch.
I don't recognize any of those brands.
You know, the funny thing is, I would be dead honest with you how that kind of came about, right? So the shoes I'm wearing are a year and a half old. I have two new pair of underwear and I haven't bought a new pair of jeans in months. And by the way, I don't have a dress shirt purchased this year. Matter of fact, I may have. What I'm trying to say is, I never spend money on anything for myself.
No, we can see that. Yeah. Those are a year half old when you bought them at the Salvation Army.
Right, exactly. These stunk then. So, where I do my luxury stuff is with my palate,
right.
And so that's the thing I like to kind of spoil because that's where I get the most enjoyment. Like, you know, having a raked out chopper or anything like that gives me no pleasure whatsoever. I have the same golf clubs I've had since 2005.
So what does it do to you when I say sometimes for lunch I'll have like a Cinnabon in the mall? Like that could be a typical lunch for me. And then maybe eat half the next day. And if it's still crusty, it's just as good to my palate.
What about when Laura's no problem eating 4-day old donuts in the studio? Someone brought in on a Monday and it's Friday. And she's like,
no shame.
Not that bad. I'll pop it in the microwave for 10
seconds.
You're
like the raccoon of XL. Yes. I love it. You will literally come
I'll
forth.
Scrape off
we
some
had
mold.
Pretzels and a radish for dinner last night.
So,
you guys think it's a joke? I was like, kids? There's nothing wrong with pretzels, and it sustains us all.
We're making in-house hummus with in-house tamponade and having
that's
beautiful...
That's why I watch your show, and it's like, I have to be by myself for a little bit on it. It's so exciting.
Yeah, some of it's pretty cool, but anyway, that's the answer. I mean, I like that stuff because that's the stuff, like when I have a nice cigar and a glass of whiskey that I love, I don't know, right. That makes me happy.
Where did we go eat lunch, and then some kind of dip came out, and I just thought it was queso. And you got so upset by that. It was like we were at some, they had like egg rolls, but it was made with white paper.
Chili's.
Oh, yeah. It was, or as we call chiles. Right.
Do you remember that, though?
The cool thing is, you know, with and I'm sure with a lot of things in everybody's life, like the minute you learn something cool, you're like, no, I've been doing this wrong the entire time.
Right.
Well, like learning all the cool spots to eat in Central Florida kind of was that epiphany to me. Like from where we sit right now, there's a place called Florida & Co. at East End Market that has one of the best banh mi sandwiches in the entire city of Orlando, including down in that Vietnamese district where you're supposed to be the OG.
No clue what you're talking about. What sandwich?
A banh mi is a stereotypically an Asian pork sandwich because it has cilantro and carrot and roast pork. It's absolutely delicious. And if they're made right, can be one of the best like taste experiences you can have in its simplicity, you know, and they make it right up the street here. And all these East End and Mills 50 areas, man, we don't eat at chains anymore at all. Occasionally we do.
Oh, brother.
Like we like Marlowe's.
Here we go.
We like Marlowe's because we've had a great relationship and every time I go in there, I get a good meal. And I know the people who own the restaurants really care about the products. Other chains do not show that mentality.
Right.
They will slop out whatever they can charge $18 for it.
So again, why we brought you on to the show is because you obviously have established that you're a connoisseur of restaurants. I'm sure you have, you know, shown the world how to do things in the kitchen. Marissa, have you ever worked in a restaurant?
No, I
you've
haven't.
Never worked never. In a not even like in college. Mm-mm. Slumming it.
Really?
Okay. That's interesting to me because like
you
a
did?
Lot of, oh my gosh, yeah.
Dude,
oh,
everybody did.
Like,
every one of
like
my kids.
You know, a growing up. Okay, so I've been a pizza delivery person. I've been, you know, I've worked at every slum restaurant.
Could you imagine getting your pie delivered by that saucy, package?
Yeah.
Sour,
and
mad.
Just giving you attitude the whole time.
Just pissed.
Here's
just
your effing
throws
pizza.
It at you.
Just questioning your decisions at the doorbell ring.
I'll have you
all
know.
Why did you get extra sausage?
Excuse me. I'll have you all know I was an excellent pizza delivery driver. I prided myself on always being on time. However, there was one time when I experienced... What is that?
No, go ahead.
So this fancy studio.
Someone had an idea.
Sound effects now.
Which brings me to this, where I was consistently sexually harassed, not only while delivering the pizzas, but while back at the pizza shop.
Oh, I believe that.
It was so awful to the point where like I would have to like talk myself into walking into work every day because it was like, oh, this... you know, 500-pound guy named Tony would be like, hey, sweet cheeks, get on to, you know, so-and-so.
So it was your manager or wasn't the people answering the...
No, it was the dude who owned the place.
It's a scourge in the business, to be honest with you. My daughter actually just left the job because of that very thing.
It's really disgusting. Yeah. And that's why I wanted to talk to him, because he knows so much about restaurants. And then, of course, we had the Mario Batali thing that just came down, where all these restaurants are closing. Hundreds of people are losing their jobs because of this one disgusting guy who like couldn't keep his hands to himself.
Why do you think that it's more common, not to overgeneralize, but why do you think that it's more common in the restaurant industry? Because I feel like restaurants are notorious for sexual harassment.
They are.
Yeah, no, there is a culture of it.
Right.
As a matter of fact, when I shared with somebody who my daughter had a problem with, is, you know, a relatively well-known guy here in Central Florida, there was no head shake. They knew. It's common knowledge that this person is a predatory sexual harasser and abuser. Language, physical movement, scheduling only stuff where he would be. Changing her job description to places where he would be at that particular on that particular shift.
Do you think that it's because there's a lot of younger employees in the restaurant industry that's just kind of an easy target?
You know, also I'll tell you something. This is probably not going to be super popular, but you know, outside of people who are going to college, it's an easy career to get trapped in, for lack of a better word. And here's why. Let's face it. You know, there's something romantic about working in a restaurant, especially if it's a name place and has a great reputation. There's a certain swagger that has, right? And you can see that related in some of the food shows that we see. And these guys are like internationally known. I remember flying into Vegas and I called my wife when we landed. And I said, look, the rock star is not your magicians anymore.
Right.
It's 80-foot Gordon Ramsay's and Giada De Laurentiis's and stuff like that. That's the new star in town. You know, that's the new game. But I believe there's a certain... situation where, you know, you get women who get in that situation, they like to party a little bit because the restaurant business has a lot of after hour partying that happens. I mean, at all levels, by the way, we're not just guys who drink a lot, all level partying, you know. And I think there's a certain female that can maybe get caught up in that. But
what about me?
You're 18. I'm talking about women who are 26 and still there because they're making $200 a night on their shift. And now they have a car payment because they wanted to ball out a couple of times. And they were, you know, so now you can't stop making $65,000 a year and go back into your normal life. You're 26 in a restaurant. Your college degree didn't pay out, whatever the case may be. I know guys who left jobs as accountants to go back to serving because the restaurant they were serving
in. So you're not saying that's why it's happening to them. You're saying that's why they stay in it.
I think they get trapped in that situation where they can't leave.
And I think
another thing, it's a small community, guys. It's no different than radio. You know, if something happens on your station, trust me, we know. Mm-hmm. And if something happens on my station, chances are you guys know. Well, imagine in the restaurant business, especially the upper level, there may be 20 games in town. All those guys know each other. All the chefs, all the owners. If they get one woman raising a little hell, blackballed. Now it's hard to find a job.
So it's like any industry when it comes to sexual harassment. You say one thing and you're blackballed unless you can somehow scrounge up 10, 15 women, and then you're maybe believed, but still probably not.
Well, that was my question. I wonder if it's changing, if the restaurant industry is changing because of Me Too. Like you said, Mario Batali, and it's becoming a lot more popular. You know, I work in bars and nightclubs for part of my gigs, and I found that it is changing. I think that there's still hope.
So I would like, walk in, he'd, you know, sweet cheeks, this and that, you know, oh, you're looking good today. I mean, just disgusting. I mean, I felt dirty the minute I would walk back out to do a delivery. And then you had, you know, just kind of just to lighten the mood a little, there was one delivery I went on and I show up. I had like, I'm not joking, minimum 10 pizzas in my hand. I was practically falling over. It's clearly a party. I show up to the front door. This guy opens the door. He takes the pizza and then he looks at me up, down. Dude, you guys got to come to the door.
Well, you went to Gronk's house.
Like, y'all got to see who delivered the pizzas. It was actually kind of funny.
They just walk up and start gawking at you. Yeah, like, what do you do? Like, do you do like a little spin or what?
Did you hang out?
No, I did not hang out. I had my little shirt on, my little pizza slice embroidered on it, and like no
joke, like you hung out.
25 dudes come to the door and we're like, no way, the chick pizza delivery driver.
Dude. She's a dime. What's up?
But I think even just the fact that I was a woman was weird. You know, when's the last time you saw a woman deliver your pizza?
Yeah, you know, that culture, I think Marissa could be onto something. I think, you know, the more embarrassment. That Batali stuff, by the way.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Disgusting.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Now, I will never forget when that broke because, you know, kind of being in that world a little bit. I remember when that broke, the first thing I read was Anthony Bourdain's tweet, which was, it's Mario or it's Batali and it's bad.
Ooh.
So, and they were friends. So it's way worse. Some of the...
Oh, he's accused of like straight raping.
Yeah. Oh, no, no. Yeah. It's systemic. I mean, it's like he was a predatory...
A known abuser.
Well, and you know that it's something that's consistent whenever they have the same MO, like the Harvey Weinstein. Oh, he would invite you for dinner into his hotel room and they happen.
The Bill Cosby. Happens
over, exactly. You've got the drinks and I come up for an audition. It sounds like he had the same systematic thing where
well,
you know it happened
them
time
too.
And time. And yeah.
Yeah. He was drugging these women too. It was no better than Bill Cosby. He's putting stuff in their drink. They said they woke up next thing you know. I mean, one half a glass of wine in, they black out.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Mario Batali had a nickname. You guys remember it?
Uh-uh.
The Red Menace. There was this room then, which was a restaurant or a meeting room slash restaurant above one of the other restaurants where a lot of the kind of, it was like an inside club type thing, like where, you know, dignitaries and famous people and other restaurant owners and whatnot would go to hang out. And he was called in that world from the staff, the Red Menace. Like there are times that he would be eating dinner and his, by the way, I guess his, one of his money partners is also one of the guys that's right up there with him, like one of the most awful people. And one of the servers bent over to put a plate down and he just reached up and grabbed her boob. Like unapologetically in front of mixed company, grabbed a girl's boob and squeezed it as if
no repercussions, you know, no fear of retaliation.
No fear of anything.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that is the key word with our situation. I started writing letters to people who had money in the restaurant. Not to him, because that doesn't
make
any difference.
Again, you're talking about your daughter's situation.
I'm talking about my daughter's situation with a relatively reputable restaurant here in Central Florida and and a very reputable chef.
So what was your first step?
And my first step was to inform the people you have a problem. And you have a problem that is understood to be a problem. In other words, it's common knowledge that there's a problem. And again, this is to one of the money people, not to the people at the restaurant. They have their own in-house HR.
Right.
And the HR is as terrified as the guy as the staff is.
Do you think that your daughter was empowered by the Me Too movement? Do you think she became more aware of it and was open to saying something because of that?
I would love to say that. She was the Me Too movement in this house is her mom.
Yeah.
So my wife, Tori, is the Me Too movement to my kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I have three daughters, and they're all beautiful, and they're all in their 20s, and they're all upwardly motivated. But my wife taught these girls to don't take from anybody.
Right.
Right.
Stand up for yourself.
And when that started happening, she tolerated it for a little bit. She kept her mouth shut, tried to manage the situation by herself. That did not work out because what is she going to do? And by the way, this guy knows what I do. This person, just to give you an idea of the level of this, he knows who I am and what I do and the voice I have. And it did not stop him. So if you ever ask yourself, do these people have control of this? They do not. But it doesn't mean that they shouldn't be punished for it. But they're at will to their drive of that perverted nature of making
feel
women smaller themselves.
Like a pedophile or something. Like
it
they
is
just
exactly
can't
that.
Help it.
It's almost uncontrollable. And it's shown over and over. The recidivism rate for activities and behavior of this nature is extremely high. Off the charts high.
And it's not that it's uncontrollable so much as it's like, to me, it's like an addict. It's
it's a power trip.
It's a
power
trip.
It's all power.
I hate when, you know, even the uncontrollable, it's like, as if they have no choice in it. And so I hate that idea. Whereas it's more like they do it once and they get a high off of it and they keep going back like an addict, you know? And so the power continues. And even like in cases of rape, time and time again, research shows that rapists don't rape for sexual gratification.
They do not.
No.
They rape 100% for the power that they get over their victims. Male, female, I don't care. It's the fact that you have the power. The person is helpless. Who are you? Are then
striking
raping.
Fear into that person?
Yeah, and you have the control. You have the power. Anyway, interesting take that you had to step in. Did anything come from it?
Well, we're still continuing the email chain is still going. The last email I wrote was fueled and the response was red, and that's it. I don't feel pressured to respond right now. It's been stated. The next move will be explaining how we feel this should be handled.
Right.
You know, I was told that there was an HR inside investigation, which apparently led to nothing because as far as I know, the gentleman is still cooking at that restaurant.
Awesome.
And we'll go from there. And that's the issue. You know, this guy's a father as well. So what do you do? What do you tell somebody who, you know, you're like, hey, wow, man, you should probably consider, you know, consider this. Put your daughter in this situation.
This is why it's interesting, because you have someone who's on the radio, who's threatening this and that. Mm-hmm. Stay away from my daughter. Don't, you know, all these things. And he's still not getting, you know, any kind of repercussions. So imagine a woman who is a, you know, up and coming starlet, not a leg to stand on in the industry. Her entire future in life is in the balance of this disgusting Harvey Weinstein, whoever you throw in any name right now, because there's hundreds. And you wonder, well, I've actually, why did she go into the hotel? I'm like, get out of here.
And you know, fortunately, Jim's wife is such a good role model for her. But there's a lot of people who don't have that kind of role model, who don't empower them to stand up for themselves. Because again, you know, in my situation, the person that I reported, I was afraid that I could be the one let go. I didn't do anything, but it could be me who's let go. And then I can't pay my rent.
Because you
I can't
are the
do
problem
this.
Then.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, you and now become the squeaky wheel.
Right. So just easily get rid of her. Yeah.
Because now you're a liability to the company. Sure. And so these women who have no recourse and know that if they say something, they're more than likely going to be eliminated from the equation and very less likely to be helped or the person, you know, handled.
I've almost acclimated myself to believe that the turnover in serving, specifically with females, is just them looking for willing participants.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, the cycle of that lifestyle does seem to be a bit transient. But when you kind of move into those roles, especially if you have an incredible shape. My daughter is a former college athlete, so she's in incredible shape. She takes very good care of herself. And on top of that, she's a beautiful girl who's very affable. She's, again, and that kind of want to be nice to everybody sometimes gets misinterpreted by people, especially weak, perverted F's like this guy.
And Jim, you have to understand, women are raised from birth to be kind, be nice, be polite. When perverts are hitting on you, we are raised to just be humble, be grateful, ignore it, and just kind of be like, take it with class, you know, and all these things. So when we become adults, it's like you have these guys just fawning over you.
Or worse, we're told we should be flattered.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It was like a good thing.
Yeah, it's like, oh, and then you have these guys, when especially with this movement and everything, you have these guys like, oh, I guess I can't hit on a woman anymore.
I can't hug anyone anymore. It's like,
I guess I can't give a compliment. You look nice. Or is that too much? And you just want to take their throat and just shove them in the wall and be like, you bleeping... you know, like,
what's up,
just,
man? I can't even say what's up with that hot onion no more.
Right.
I can't even talk about them teas no more. What's up?
Yeah.
What's up?
Exactly. So let me ask you guys a question. Now that we do have two guys in the room, which we don't often.
No.
I had a story that I told Marissa I wanted to ask you guys about, because this is from years ago. Clearly, I've been harboring it for, I'm not joking, 6 years. Nope, 7 years. 7 years ago, I had a friend.
Da-na-na-na-na.
Oh, boy.
Her name was Courtney.
Is this a real name? Or are you?
It's a real name.
It's a real name, yeah.
I have no shame in this.
All right.
Courtney, again, Jim knew me in the days when I drank too much. And Mike also
too
knew...
Too much is all relative.
Mike and I don't know if we were just married or... No, we were just married. And she was over at our house. No kids. Again, this is forever ago. Oh. Do you know where I'm going with this?
No, but
we were wasted. She was wasted. And she told me...
Should I lower the lights? This sounds like it's going to get a little freaky. Are we cool? Or
no, it's not going to get freaky. But I think... I don't know where she was
Marissa
going with
started
it.
Looking sideways.
Well,
she's like,
I just recall that she's no longer a friend. So I'm really wondering where this is going.
You know, oddly enough, we did remain friends. Again, Marissa knows that I have dated former Klan members. So I don't really have a barometer of when you're supposed to cut
she's
people
not
makes
best,
me feel
she's
really
not
special.
She's not the best judge of character.
Now, Jim, before you freak out, I didn't know he was a Klan member until after he told me, and then things fizzled out.
It's another episode.
After a couple of days, and maybe got a little taste, but yeah,
I mean,
then they cut it.
It was already too late in that department to go back in time, but after I found out, I did let things naturally fizzle out. But anyway, no.
After the 30th Heil Hitler, I got to tell you, I got tired of it.
It naturally ended in about 3.5 years.
No, seriously, I ended it right after he told me he went to a Klan meeting. But that's neither here nor there.
All right, yeah, right.
So Courtney says to me that night. Yeah, I know. I'm honestly, I am the leader of the civil rights movement, really. So Courtney says to me drunkenly, every guy would cheat if he had the opportunity and would not get caught.
In other words, if I thought I could cheat on my wife and there's zero question.
0% chance she'd ever know.
She would
and
ever know.
You 100% had, like, it wasn't like, is she hitting on me or isn't she? It was like, she's offering it up on a platter.
Yeah.
No doubt about that. No question of consent here. And there's 0% chance of your wife finding out. And I said, well, that's just an inaccurate statement. My husband here would absolutely never cheat on me, even if he knew I was not going to find out. And she, to like, hardlined it. Yes, he would. She told me, are you ready? He would bleep me if he could.
Well, she's just not a very good friend, is she?
Is she cute?
She's cute.
No, she's a beautiful girl and she's a fun girl. I think she was joking about that.
No, Mike. No, she was not. She was not joking, Mike.
Oh, she went low voice on you.
Yeah, she did. She threw that thought down.
You know why? Why I mean it? Because I gave her 10,000 outs so that I could be sure whether she was joking.
Do you think that she was like testing the waters?
Marissa, that's what I'm saying is, like, I don't know where
we're going with this. I'm just, like, wondering if she was like, would you mind?
Say, no, seriously, have him in here and pull down his pants. Let's see what happens.
No, she did not say that. But I'm, okay, I was like, what? And she was hardline. Yes, he would. Yes, he would. And I was like, Courtney, he would not sleep with you if he could. That is completely inappropriate. And I was mad. I mean, side note that she was my friend. Is that true?
I definitely got in trouble over this, by the way.
Yes,
well,
he did.
Of course
he did.
Because you're just existing.
Yeah. You're what they call, you're that, what's it?
I love how Mike and Jim are like super uncomfortable right now.
So uncomfortable, and I love reading their body
language. We're just staring at each other's eyes. And it's
like,
just
who's
going
to go first? Who's going to say it?
Because no
I cheat, but
honest.
Only with Mike.
But no one's going to be honest, I guess, because then like your wife would be mad.
100% honest. You know, the funny thing is so how my first marriage ended really set the tone. So I think that particular statement could be age specific, because I'm 50 and I'm happier in a relationship than I've ever. I didn't know what a real relationship, like an honest relationship, was like. Well, I'm in an honest relationship now. We're pretty transparent with each other, so it's a weird thing. I just happen to be married to a beautiful girl that thinks I'm cool. So that's another thing too. When your girl looks at you like my girl looks at me. And I know that there's no reason she should be, because I'm this old shriveled prune of a human. And it's just like one of those things that happens. But like, I would never cheat on my wife. And the reason why is I know this is because I've had chances and lots of them. The nature of my job provides
bragging
an environment
now
to explore opportunities like that if you feel it so necessary. And really, to be honest with you, we do trips alone all the time. She leaves and goes away for days at a time. I'll leave and go do a trip by myself for business or whatever all the time. And I'm sure we both have had plenty of opportunities. I just don't see an excitement in it, because I've never had anybody look at it. And I think maybe your friend has a real problem with her relationship, because maybe
she has no relationship.
She's never had
a relationship.
Well, maybe that's why, because she believes that, and because she saw it somewhere in her life, maybe from her father or a close family
Someone
member.
Someone cheated.
Maybe brother, because for you, or I've had a lot of friends who really buy into that. I can name 5 guys right now that there is 0 possibility of them ever cheating on their wives.
Okay,
no chance.
But now throw in the 0% chance of ever finding out.
I'm such a bad liar, Laura. If my wife could find out immediately just by looking at me and go, what'd you do? I mean, I would just break down and start peeing on myself which happens once a week anyway. But anyway, but I just don't really look at it like that. Had you asked me that before, I would have told you yes.
I genuinely believe him. I genuinely believe that at some point there's no desire to
you
cheat.
Grow out
because
of it.
I think part of the thrill
Jim
is
Jim just wiped his brow when you said you believe him. Like, oh shit.
But I do. I think that at some point there's no thrill in cheating. I think when you're younger, there's a certain thrill that comes with it. Like, oh, this is not something I'm not supposed to be doing.
Also, it's an ego trip, Marissa. People find you attractive. You're like, look at
right.
You know, it's quite an aphrodisiac for somebody to come on to you real heavy like that. And you're like, holy, I feel like I owe it to him now, yeah. You know, because.
And it's new and it's,
this
it's
guy.
New, yeah, but it's new and it's exciting.
Girl, I owe you some of this.
Well, that's why you see all the time, you know, it's the taboo that makes it so hot.
Right.
And it's like, you know, because I shouldn't be doing this mm-hmm. and I am, that's what makes it hot. The minute these people get married, you see it all the time. These people leave their husbands and wives for each other. And then it's like, well,
oh, we just saw Shania Twain. You guys know about that thing, right?
No.
Shania Twain, best friend, cheated on her with her husband. She, in turn, married her best friend's ex-husband.
Jeez. Oh, that's
so
right.
They basically just swapped partners.
Well, you know, how many times though do you see people cheat with someone who is far less attractive than their current
all
mate?
The time.
And it's not because that person is, you know, so
hotter.
Amazing and you're so
yeah,
turned on by
dirty.
Them. The opportunity is there and the thrill is there.
Also, yep. There's a certain appreciation that men, and this is specific, I mean, trust me, this is a gender thing for sure, but there's a certain thing with men where half of finding you attractive is how attractive you find us. It has nothing to do with how pretty or whatever it is if a woman looks at you and you know that they're turned on by you as a package, not necessarily by the way you look or what you drive or whatever, they just love your personality and that's what makes them excited to be around you or whatever. I believe that for dudes, especially post 35, has a ton of value. I
would imagine that would be something awesome.
So yeah. Mike, cool. Are you going to answer the question?
Okay. So you wouldn't find out.
Tread lightly.
No, but. See,
I'm
I think
kidding.
My thing
I'm
is...
I'm serious. I want
to
know.
I think I would feel so guilty because I can't even really lie to you about little things. I think I would feel guilty, but I feel like if you wouldn't find out and I wouldn't feel guilty, I think I might take a pop.
Take a pop.
You know how you just believed Jim? Believe Mike.
I believe
him
too.
Really do. And I don't... I mean, how could I be mad
Mike,
at that?
I believe Mike, and I don't even think he cares about the guilt part.
No. No, but here's... No, he does care about the guilt.
No,
I think
the
guilt is the only thing that would keep him from cheating.
Well, now, let's not... I think it would be extremely uncomfortable to be with somebody else because, you know, we've been together a long time and...
How long?
10 years?
Yeah. Over 11 years.
I mean, that's a long time.
Yeah,
you
that's
know,
a long
I
time.
Mean, it's all relative, but
no, it is a long time.
I think that's a long time.
Yeah, Tori and I've been together just a little bit longer than that. So maybe.
Look, I'm an adult here, and I know what I look like. I've already told Laura. I was like, look, if you have to stray, just don't let me find out about it.
Yeah,
he has said that, you guys, multiple times.
Look at me.
He says it.
What am I gonna do?
Too much. It's almost like.
Like he wants you to.
Well, yeah, like it's almost like he's pushing me
right.
to sometimes.
I just
want to
watch.
He's always just
watch and don't make eye contact.
Well, and he's always like,
no,
listen,
seriously,
we'll
if that
about...
does happen, I'll take an Uzi to everything.
Yeah,
and I know that's not even a funny
he'll
thing.
He'll be like,
about,
well, so. Here we have everyone
but
as you get older, okay. You have more and more friends who are going through a divorce, who are cheating on each other, having affairs. Things just start to happen with your friends. Everyone
sure.
just starts falling off one by one.
And divorce seems horrible.
It seems awful.
It's the worst thing you could ever go through.
Right? Okay. There's like some human stress index where divorce is number one, but above some deaths in the family.
I believe that.
But it was more destructive to me than a death.
But then I've seen people stay together.
And
and they shouldn't be, and that's even worse to watch.
Talking to a very close, just a close person in my life recently, they're just going through this. It just happened a couple days ago, and I said, you know, you gotta get away from that poisonous situation because it's poisonous.
It
There's
is.
No
it's
other
like
way to
a
say
cancer.
It.
Yeah.
It is a cancer, and that cancer
grows.
Can spread into
mm-hmm.
your kids' lives because they see her, and you know. They don't understand the dichotomy of what was 2 years ago as opposed to what mm-hmm. is now.
Yeah.
They start applying that to themselves and it becomes very bad. You separate, you create relationships, you rebuild, and you go forward. But
so here's a question.
No way
then,
to explain how dark that is.
If you were in a toxic relationship, which clearly if you got a divorce, it
yeah,
was
it
somewhat
was.
Toxic.
It was bad. And 50-50, 100%.
Okay, so and them. Now you've been through a divorce. You say it was devastating, it was awful, worst
yeah.
thing in your life. would staying in it have been worse than the devastation of getting the divorce?
It would have been, because it would be like, imagine purgatory, where purgatory feels like death every day, because you're walking to you walk into a loveless home where the only common denominator are the children, and you find going and doing things considerably more tedious daily. There is no physical connection, which is that is the spike through the heart of a relationship. If you, said best by somebody, you know, if I just wanted a friend, I'd find somebody to drink beer and go play golf with me.
Well, you could have a roommate,
right?
With
anyone. I mean, sex is the separator. Yeah. That's your physical relationship with your mate is the separator in your relationship. Mm-hmm. That's what makes them. You know, without that, you just have a roommate, just somebody you hang out with.
Well, there's, you know, people who are having a hard time. They'll go, like, I read somewhere that if you have it less than 10 times a year, it's considered a sexless marriage.
I would agree with that. Mine went considerably longer than that. I remember there were portions of my last relationship that would go, one stretch was 13 months, the other one was 8 months. Of not having sex at all. No physical contact.
Wow.
No nothing. I mean, no physical contact. Barely kissing, actually, in that
point. I can't even imagine
that. It was awful. I don't think about it ever, because my wife and I now literally can't keep our hands off of each other. She's going to come in about 10 minutes. We're going to show you guys. Delivered perfectly. Set up perfectly.
Really
delivered.
We were waiting. We were waiting like bated breath.
Is that going to happen though?
Is
that Mike's chance where I won't find out? No. So you would, because you know you're going to hear about this later.
You better be careful.
You know, Mike, can I tell you something?
What?
Special Mike, right? That's such a fitting nickname.
Nothing but it.
He can never
pure,
win.
Pure, golden.
He is.
Flawless. Like
what are you saying?
Like a VS1 diamond. You can look right through it and see
Are you talking about Laura?
No, I'm talking about you answering this question. With any other question than answer than no. I mean, seriously. I don't know how to feel about it. There's a different level, ninja level respect for you now.
You're making me nervous. I don't.
Your wife
I changed my answer.
Your
then.
Wife is right there.
Listen, Laura, you know I worship you. You can't I always want to be around you. But you're asking me if nobody's feelings were hurt.
Look at that smile. I mean,
nobody
how could
found
you do
out.
Anything to hurt that smile? Are you kidding me?
She has tears in her eyes.
No.
So the honest answer is no, I would not. Not at all.
Son of a bitch, got it. And again, as if
smart
I didn't think
man.
I could respect
man.
You anymore, you hit me with that one and it goes up.
So okay, so if I would never find out, you wouldn't have the guilt, you would try it for just one night.
I don't even know if I would try it, but if I wanted to do it.
So she was right the whole time.
Okay, here's the scenario that I've got in my head, because maybe I've stepped into some doo-doo here.
Yeah,
but
the only real question is your use of the word maybe.
If no one is bothered by it, would I go get some strange? But I don't want to answer anymore. I just say, I think no.
It doesn't take anymore.
Do you have a shovel in the garage?
Oh, yeah, I got plenty of things.
I feel like Mike has such intense levels of guilt that he would get to the part where it was about to happen and he would start like saying Laura's name, or he would just like
go home
put
like a
his
rain
clothes
out?
On and run out.
But
like,
Laura will also tell you, I'll talk to anybody in the first minute of conversation, because I like to really talk with people, is I bring up my wife and my kids just to let people know.
I'm off limits, yeah. Ladies.
If you need an equalizer, I would too. So there's that.
Oh, an F off. Why are you guys giving me a hard time?
I'm just trying to say.
It's just the record. My wife probably would too.
But
I mean,
seriously, if you
me.
Do that, please don't do that.
He always says that. If you ever cheat on me, don't tell me. Don't
well,
tell me.
Why?
Because
well,
we see
would
these
you
people.
Tell him?
The guilt.
A lot of people tell. After they cheat.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. You've cheated and you haven't told me.
No, I haven't. No, Marissa, I'm telling you. I see it time and time again.
I can see the
guilt. Well, you know what it is? They want to unburden themselves.
It's not to make their mate feel better or mend the relationship. It is to get it off their chest.
They're holding this burden of a lie. And they, instead of just dealing with it and not telling someone that it will then hurt and potentially hurt your kids and everything else, they want to unburden themselves. It causes a grenade being dropped in a marriage and your children's lives.
I mean,
and it's all
think
for your
about
own.
It.
It's for yourself.
Yeah. Yourself.
I would come home. You would be like doing something with the kids. And I'd be like, oh, my God, the mother of my wife. I would be going back thinking of all the times. And now I've just ruined it.
Plus, I wouldn't want to be naked in front of anyone else because I'd be like, what is this blob in the bed?
See, you always say that, but I always stare at you when you get in and out.
Okay. Oh, my God.
Don't even get me started on it. My wife actually took this a different way. We have conversations like this all the time because we're married and mentally ill.
Okay.
Is the word. She'll go, I'll be eating a big, huge meal, which I love to do occasionally. And she'll look at me and go, you know, if you lose your feet to diabetes, I'm leaving.
And she's not joking, right? I mean, and she's not joking.
Well, it is kind of a joke because I always tell her if this happens, we always like, look, if you do that, I mean, and she tells me, don't make me have to wait on you and like a patient or I'm not going to be able to. And it's just kind of a running joke. I think we'd do anything for each other. Tori?
Yeah. you seem to get sadder the more you talk.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, whenever Mike's like, if I pass, you're never allowed to move on, from me. And I'm like, yes, I am.
She said, my wife, of course, contends that she will haunt me if she passes before me and I try to get with anybody else, which is going to take days.
So many days.
Oh my God.
So many days in the week.
Wow.
Well, this was awkward.
Was it really awkward?
I feel Mike making it awkward. Everybody else was having a good time until Mike showed up.
Every time Mike comes on this podcast, it results in some sort of marital dispute that Laura, no joke, will talk to me about 3 weeks later. She'll be like,
I don't feel like we're in a dispute.
You can't put that podcast up because it's just, they're just bashing me. Everyone's going to bash me about it. It's always some sort of marital dispute with these two.
Why am I so lost on this? We're not disputing, are we?
No, seriously, I'm totally fine.
It's because she has new meds. She's really balanced out.
Head to toe.
Don't you agree, Mike?
No emotion. I get it.
I do agree.
If I wasn't on this new cocktail, I don't know.
This is a good cocktail. But we really don't care.
I don't care. Is that bad?
It is bad. It's bad. You should have some fire.
Should I be mad
at Mike?
Yeah.
For saying that?
Yeah.
Wait. I don't feel like I said anything wrong yet.
Yes.
Just give you a minute.
Yeah.
Should we sit to the side and let you do your thing?
Didn't you have some other questions to ask?
No. Here's the thing. From a guy's perspective, I can't see Mike doing that because here's the thing. You know what Mike and I were talking about before you guys got here? How much he wants to make sure that his career doesn't interfere with his time with his family. And we were talking about that on an organic level because of our schedules. He's like, how's things? I'm like, I'm great. Primetime Kitchen is killing me because it's my third radio show that I do.
Right.
And we have a lot of money and time invested into it. And it's paying off a little bit. People kind of buy it in the whole nine yards. But my kids are gone. So I can concentrate on my career. It was kind of designed that way. Well, you guys are in that phase now where you have to figure out where your career is to make sure you have ample time for your family. It is the most important thing. Yeah. There is no first, second tie. Your most important thing is being productive.
But you opened up your mouth saying that, and Laura and Marissa gave me a BS look.
No, it's 100% true.
Not BS. I thought it was really sweet.
No, it's true, though. But that's...
I'm just not very good.
But I've known Mike like that forever. I never thought Mike was that guy.
No,
Mike has never hit me as that guy.
You know I'm not going to go.
You don't hit that guy. You're not going out looking for tail?
Here at the end of the day.
Not if you tail. Call it tail.
I don't even know what to say.
You really don't have to worry about it,
I just
want to
have warm coitus with my wife and be left alone. Watch Netflix.
At the end of the day, there is no world in which there's 0% chance you're going to get caught and 0% guilt.
That's right.
And 0%
I mean, I'll even take 15% because that's a gamble.
I want to start a new age band called Warm Coitus.
That's what Mike thinks we do.
I just want to do Enya covers. Some yawning.
So at the end of the day, I sleep okay knowing that he's not going to cheat on me because it's way too much work and I know how lazy he is.
I am pretty lazy fella.
Mike is lazy and Laura's difficult to live with, so I don't think you have to worry about Laura either. So I think you guys are great. This is a perfect marriage.
And I don't know if I can say that, so I'm not going to say that.
Yeah. Let's back that up.
Good.
What makes you difficult to live with? Do you mind me switching to Flitch and ask you a question?
I'm like, the host comes out now. I'm not difficult to live with. I'm not difficult to live with.
Yeah, she's difficult to live with. But here's the deal. It's a good payoff. Like, gosh, maybe I shouldn't be so blunt when I answer the question.
No, be blunt.
I need her to be difficult to live with because, honest to God, I don't know what would happen. Like, I dropped Nora off at school today, went to my car, took off, and then remembered, I got to take her to piano right now. Like, if Laura's not Laura, everybody's going down.
At the end of the day, honest to God, and I think a lot of marriages or relationships are like, you have to balance each other out. You can't have two control neat freaks together. Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't think that's going to work. Like that.
It doesn't.
See it trying to happen with people. Have you ever seen it try to happen?
Yeah, of course.
And it's a disaster to watch, and you're like, oh, those poor people. Yes. They think they're going to work out, and they never do.
Yeah, that whole, when you find somebody like all that in common, you know, Tori and I first got together, like, she is 9 years younger than I am.
I'm 7 years younger than mine.
Right. So the music taste thing is weird for us because she's like a 90s. She grew up listening to 90s rock and 90s pop. And I like all kinds of stuff, but she just wants to, you know, she likes that. She likes shows from the 90s and stuff. TV shows from that era that I never watched. It was just out of that range where we talk about the same, like, my sitcoms were not her sitcoms. I came in, like, she loved Friends and that stuff, and I was Cheers.
Yeah. So I was just about to say Cheers.
So it's kind of a weird thing there, but you know what works out great with that is when we watch the shows, I get to see how it affected her at that point in her life, and then vice versa. This stuff is always entertaining, and we've learned more from each other than I would have ever learned if I would have dated somebody my age, had the same sensibilities. You know, it would have turned into that thing, but every single day there's something about a relationship that kind of blossoms simply because we don't have the same sensibilities. And you know what? Tori is my Laura because although I do have a lot going on, and seemingly from the outside, you're like, wow, we got it buttoned up okay. Truthfully, that is as team effort as it gets, because where I would be right now if I didn't have somebody reminding me that this was happening today, I'd be in bed. You know, I'd be doing something else because I would have forgotten that that's what this is because we have so many things going. If Tori didn't help me manage my life, I genuinely don't know what I would do.
Yeah, honestly, the two of you guys balance
each other really well. I'll tell you
this, I lean on her as a partner. Yeah. Not as much as a wife. She is a partner to me. She's that thing that kind of keeps me going during the day. And when I get down on myself or get full of anxiety because of I'm a perfectionist, so I like things to be perfect every single time. And she's like, you know, you don't have to be that way all the time. And it does. It lends me to have that little bit of, oh, yeah, you're right. The world's not going to come to an end if this gig doesn't sell out. We're going to do another gig someday.
Yeah, who cares?
Can I tell the story about the talk we had when you said, look, I'm here to do this.
Yeah.
And you're here. This was like the most eye-opening thing. So the real estate is getting busy. And when things are getting completely busy, I'm still trying to do, you know, whatever with the kids. And Laura's doing whatever with the kids. And I'm just getting stressed. And I'm getting freaked out. And Laura's like...
He stresses easily.
Yeah.
Very easily.
Because I'm apparently lazy, which I didn't think. But okay. But so, I'm sorry. I'll let you finish texting on your phone, and then I'll get back to the.
Sorry, I just got to.
No, I understand. That's definitely more important.
I'll tell you in a second. It's awful. I'm so sorry.
Not at all. I'm kidding. So anyway, so Laura sits me down, and she's like, "Mike, in this family, I'm the breadwinner. I'll always be the breadwinner. And you're here to, support.
It's a fact.
And I swear to you, it stopped me in my tracks, and it was like. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, we've got savings. We've got college funds. We've got a rental house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to be okay.
Your wife is an extremely talented broadcaster. She'll always find a home to make some money.
What am I over here trying to do?
Yeah. You can do anything, dude.
I love that about y'all's relationship in particular is because, you know, Mike spends a lot more time raising the kids than most fathers do. You know, most fathers are the breadwinners and they kind of leave the parenting.
Although not anymore. Now it's more 50%.
I'm just saying generally. I don't personally know someone who spends as much time with the kids as Mike does. Really, a man. Yeah. I don't.
He's essentially a stay-at-home dad.
Right. Yeah. And so I think
you probably know a lot of successful people.
But success doesn't have to be being the breadwinner. I mean, obviously, you play a really integral part to y'all's marriage because you are taking them to piano. You are. I'll never forget my dad taking me to dance lessons and ice skating lessons and things like that. Like, that's so important.
Your parents have been together how many years?
A long time. A very long time. Over 30 years.
Well, people who, like, enjoy that things. Like, I look forward to going to volleyball matches. I mean, I'll never forget, you know, for many years, two of my daughters played volleyball. Had a daughter who was in, she was color guard for Lyman, right? And then my son wrestled. So for about 5.5 years of my life, every weekend, 70 degree spring weekend, instead of being out doing cool stuff, playing or whatever, I was in gyms watching my kids play volleyball literally from daylight to to sun up, sundown. And I will never, ever, ever forget it. There was something very rewarding about that.
Because, and they'll never forget it. Yeah,
and,
they won't.
And the thing is if it is your life, you don't think about it like, oh, look what I'm missing. You're really not missing anything, which you're getting by being at those events. Because when you see your kids come to you and they lose or when they win and they celebrate with you like you're part of their life, I mean, that's the payoff you're looking for. And we hear that word success a lot. And Mike and I were just talking about this. You know, success is relative. Financial success doesn't mean anything. I mean, I know a lot of our friends have done quite well for themselves, and we see those guys fighting with kid problems because dad was never home. There's never an established dominance in the house. There's never direction, but they have cool cars.
Yeah, and they live
on a on a cool lake, and they wear cool stuff.
I'll even venture to say the people that I know, the more money they have, the less happy. Honestly, the more unhappy they are. The more money they have, in my experience of people I know, the more miserable they are. Now, of course, that's just a generalization, but that's just what I've noticed, because it's honestly, it just fills black holes that will never be filled with that kind of
thing. But if you think about the math works out perfectly, the more time you put into your career to become successful financially, the less time you can put into your success at home. So really, it makes perfect sense. People who kind of live moderately to give everything to their kids, which I certainly appreciate. It's a tell on your personality. Yet they don't have the most glamorous address, or they don't have the most glamorous ride, but whatever the case may be. And they don't take great vacations all the time, but they are together all the time.
That's right. And their kids aren't screwed up.
You see at the end, those guys are in family pictures 10 years, 15, 20 years on the picture, whereas you look at those Facebook pages now, and those things tell the truth.
And that's why I appreciate Mike so much, and I always have to... I always have to be like, you know, it's okay. You're a stay-at-home dad for all intents and purposes, and that's okay. And I'm the one who works, and that's probably how it's always going to be. That's probably just the way it's going to be.
I would never let my wife say that to me.
Oh my God, Jim.
He's just
poking hates us.
It's like he's just poking the fire because he wants to see Laura get fired up.
I was waiting for something.
He really wants to see Laura get riled up and do the deep voice.
I'm so glad that you said that on our Face of a Feminist podcast.
Hey, you man, get me a sandwich.
I'd never let my wife say that to me.
That's and the funny. Other problematic thing, as we'll end this, is that, you know, it's tough being a woman in that position. I know it's tough for Mike to be a man in that position, because while we may have evolved as two human beings, society hasn't quite evolved. So it's
weird. I do get shunned at the school with the kids from the other mothers.
And
I really
I get
do. They
shunned.
Don't include me in all their games. You know, they get together and they have these little powwows, and I'm never included.
And it's always like,
and it bothers me.
You didn't know that so-and-so is happening at the school. It's like, no, because I'm working. And so, no, how would I possibly know that? And it's like little things like that. Or like when I come home, I feel the need to throw in a load of laundry or do the dishes, or even though I know Mike will do it. It's not that he's not doing it. It's that I feel this intense pressure to do these womanly chores. You know, it's a rough, weird situation.
I can't believe he allows you to go to work all the time.
I know.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
What I really like to do is I like to get the kids ready for school, get them to bed, bake a nice little cranberry pie or something like that, and then bring the thunder in the bedroom.
Yeah. That's where it matters. That's where you're the that's
and
where you're the
state. I think that's where we should end this. Yes.
That's the real stay-at-home dad.
Yeah.
You feel me?
Wait.
Thank
are we
you
done?
Guys.
Why do we always end so abruptly?
It's been an hour.
We're just been chatting away.
I always feel like I say something and
then
we end it.
No, it's been great. What has it been, Jim? An hour?
I don't know. I was just about to check that out.
On his fancy computer.
It's one of our longer ones.
Can we come podcast in here all the time instead of my kitchen?
You can anytime you want. 53 minutes. You got about 7 minutes.
All right, let's wrap this baby up, Laura.
Got about 7 minutes of prime talking time
all
there,
right.
Laura.
What I want you to do, Jim, is tell us how people can get a hold of you or your shows.
So it's pretty easy. If you just go to Primetime Kitchen on Instagram, Twitter, and or Facebook, if you follow us, we do cool stuff. We tell you about news happening with the restaurants in Orlando, deals like Bite 30 coming up, presented by the Orlando Weekly and Publix Apron Schools. Publix has their own cooking school. A lot of people don't even know that. But those are the things you kind of learn on our show. And on Tuesday nights, which is tonight, where we will on Facebook, we do a thing called How Tuesday, where basically I take my 25 plus years of cooking experience and I show you how to make cool stuff. We find that, oddly enough, this being a show about feminism, we find that a lot of dudes watch this show because they want to learn how to cook for their women. I've made an impact on guys to get them to believe that cooking, nothing wrong with cooking. There's nothing not manly about cooking. And there's something very cool about serving your wife a really good, nice, prepared plate of food and serving a dinner together. There's something really special about that. And that's what we do step by step with the video. And then my wife films it. We have fun poking fun at each other. She basically makes fun of me and I defend myself. That's the show. And then,
it's
of course,
really good.
I will say, just to jump in there, I watch it every Tuesday. It really is good.
So
and that's why
time.
I make like the meatballs and stuff like that. I just try to
It's Primetime Kitchen on Facebook. Go follow it. And then when you go live, I will say, because this won't probably be on Tuesday when someone's listening. But go to Facebook, Primetime Kitchen, and it'll pop up on your little feed when he goes live.
It will. And we have a show called, we have a website called ptkradio.com, PTK, primetimekitchenradio.com. And it has all the past episodes. And we have recipes that you can download. And it all, by the way, the cool thing we have with the recipes, if you're making it for four people, but if you just change the number to eight, it'll do all the math for you in the recipe. So that when you go to buy your ingredients.
How much was that on the web? In the web, oh, the web guy.
All of it's just so expensive. I can't even begin to tell you. It's just marketing and doing this stuff is so expensive. But anyway, you can do that. And then the other thing you can help is the Jim Colbert Show on Real Radio 104.1. It's 3 to 7 on Fridays now. It's the Jim Phillips slot. We're taking over him full time in 2019. That pretty much wraps me up.
That's amazing.
When is this going to air, by the way?
Tuesday. We do it every Tuesday, so we're a week ahead. So next Tuesday.
Yeah. We're trying to set a routine before. This has become quite an endeavor that we've taken on. But now we've set on Tuesdays.
It's a lot of fun though, and it's good. We are having a boozy brunch at Tapaturo. This will air before that. If you want to get tickets, you can see it at Primetime Kitchen.
Nice. Perfect. Thank you so much.
You got it, man.
And again, Face of a Feminist podcast group on Facebook is where we have all of our super secret private fun because you can't see the page unless you're in it and we have to approve you. So follow us there.
And if you need me, you can find me at Publix or the kids' school or folding panties.
Or at Mike Oliver Homes where he will destroy any real estate need you have.
There
like he
you had, go.
That is
like,
true.
Like
he
it
had,
out.
Like
it
he
out.
Helped me close the house we're sitting in right now.
I will say.
He is a monster.
He does get mad because I don't fold correctly. So.
She doesn't have the creases, so.
Thank you, Mike. You're welcome back anytime.